Amex upgrade offers, grocery promos, and we answer questions from future listeners on today's Milenomics Squared podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon.
And I'm Robert Dwyer.
And this is the Milenomics Squared podcast, no annual fee edition.
If you're not subscribed to the full Milenomics Squared podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into topics like the following. News item number 1 and 2 is a collection of upgrade offers from American Express. Doctor of Credit has surfaced up a couple of links from readers on ways to upgrade cards for heightened upgrade offers. So the first one just came out. This is an upgrade offer for the Amex Business Platinum for 50,000 membership rewards for spending $10,000 in the next 5 months. And you need to have an existing green or gold business Amex membership rewards card and log into your Amex account and see if the link works for you in terms of bringing up the offer. Now, I have this offer on both of my cards, my wife's account and my account as well. We're both eligible for this, and we both have business gold cards that we got within the last 6 months. So have you had a chance to check this in? Were you able to bring up that link?
So it did work when I logged in. I have a business gold and gave me the offer to upgrade, but I'm not going to take it up for the reasons we discussed a few weeks back on the paid show. I had a targeted version of this exact same offer, and I have not had a business platinum yet. So I don't want to lose out on maybe the larger sign-up bonus for a first-time card member in going for this. It's not real clear to me that this would allow me to still get a sign-up bonus. So that's a consideration I think that listeners want to take into effect. But you went in on it, right, Robert?
I'm just checking now to make sure that we actually did both have the business platinum before. Whew. Yes, we both had it before. I was so excited to see whether it worked.
Hijinks and more on today's Milenomics Square podcast. Yeah,
got a sinking feeling when you had that advice that we talked about on the show just last week. Oh, it does say offer is available for first-time upgrades, the new business platinum card only, and only for one card account. So I was a little concerned that since I had the card, I wouldn't qualify. Maybe I wouldn't qualify because I wasn't really targeted for this link. A lot of question marks about this, but I did go for it. I think there's a lot of value to be had in getting this card a second time, even if, you know, 50,000 isn't as good as the direct sign-up bonuses we've seen for this card. I mean, 75,000, 100,000, 150,000. So I think you're right to hold off until you get a better offer if you have never had the card before. But in my case, there's so much value in the first year of a Amex Platinum card that I can see my way to this being a good deal. I did upgrade and I have that in process. So, you know, I was surprised to see this available given the information that we've heard from time to time about the Card Act and it being a reason why you can't upgrade a credit card to a card that has a higher annual fee within the first year of having it. I think I've had that in the back of my head and didn't think this would work, but it seemed to go through in this case. Any theories on what that really means? Why am I not disqualified from upgrading in this case?
You know, the only thing I could think of is that these aren't credit cards. These are charge cards. And so maybe they react differently. What do you think?
I have no idea. I had that in the back of my head and I hadn't been upgrading cards within the first year because of that. But I don't know. Yeah, that's a good, interesting theory. The wording on the card act does say credit card. Maybe charge cards behave differently. I don't know. Amex does seem to like to, if they're going to ask you to upgrade, they seem to like to do it right around the, towards the end of the first year, figuring they have kind of gotten your useful life out of your first engagement with them. And here we go, you know, bilk them for a little bit more money. But anyways, there's another offer that came out recently, and that's for an upgrade to the Hilton Aspire card for $150,000. Hilton points, which is as good as the sign-up bonuses for the card, and this is available if you have a no-fee Hilton card or the $95 annual fee Ascend version of the card. And again, a direct link for that that seems to work for everybody who has either of those cards. That is coming up for me as well. Have you been able to check that one out? Is that one working for you as well?
Well, I don't have an Ascend, so I don't have the ability to try that out, but I think this is a fantastic offer if you are looking to get an Aspire. This is as good as applying for it directly, and theoretically, you might be able to apply and then upgrade, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the only thing I want to add on both of these upgrade offers is to use that standard Milenomics technique of chatting with account reps from Amex and verifying that you have correctly signed up for the promotion. Get it in writing before you do any of the spend necessary, especially on that platinum upgrade. Would hate to see you do the spend when the account wasn't connected correctly. It's a lot easier to fix things on the front end with American Express.
That's a good point, especially at 10,000, like you say. Thanks for that. I will take that into advice and report back. Boy, what a week for Amex. You want to take this next one here?
Yeah, we always say it's the most fun website to log into. So readers and listeners are reporting targeted bonuses on the magnitude of 40 to 50% in some cases for very good transfer partners on their membership reward portal. And so we're seeing 40% bonuses for JetBlue. We're seeing 40 to 50% for British Airways. We're seeing bonuses for Marriott. And that's just what we're seeing. And take a look and see if you're targeted for any bonuses. I would caution clicking through on any of these. There have been situations in the past, not necessarily with these partners, but where clicking through, you get a one-time shot at these bonuses. Have you ever seen that, Robert?
I've heard that. I haven't been targeted for any of these. I'm very jealous, especially of the British Airways one. 40 to 50% on British Airways? Hot tamales. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh,
that's a good one.
I just burned like 200,000 British Airways.
Yeah, you'd love that with all the membership rewards you have flying around. Were you targeted for any of these?
I got the JetBlue 40%, which I think is a very good offer. You know, JetBlue points can have a sliding scale value.
Well, what is it? What is the valuation there? This takes it to, this is getting into Capital One type valuation, right?
It is, yeah. So it's 250 to 280. 280.9 per membership reward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna be able to do the math.
This is, we're putting them in the Capital One doghouse for having a strange exchange ratio. And then they give you some targeted, wacky promotion on top of that. And then over on JetBlue, there's a sliding scale. It's like, oh, it seems like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, as long as you're not flying Mint. Yeah. So, you know, take a look at your membership reward portal. See what you're targeted for. And if you want to get our input on that, just post a comment down here in the questions and comments below this episode. Robert, any more news?
Yes, there are airline shopping portal bonuses for United and American this week. Spend $300 and United for 1,000 miles. Spend $200 on American for 500 miles. And those expire 6/23 and 6/16 respectively. Make some small purchases over at those to keep your miles alive and boost the amount of miles you're getting per transaction. Links in the show notes for these from Frequent Miler.
At Safeway locations, we have a $15 off of two MasterCard gift cards. Eats up both of the fees on those cards. You need to add this in your Just For You, and this runs through June 18th. Anything going on at the grocery store out there, Robert?
Yes, Stop & Shop is back with a promotion that they've run before. It's if you buy $100 in third-party gift cards, you get a voucher for $15 off your next grocery order. So the ad says for these third-party gift cards and more, Best Buy, Lowe's, Happy Lady, and a few others. When this came up, I saw it seemed like they'd never had this wording before. These pictured and more. Like, what does this mean? You know, it excludes
more, yeah.
MasterCard gift cards, excludes Visa gift cards, Amex gift cards, and things like that. But these and more. So I sent the Mileonomics intern over to do an experiment. I had the intern purchase a $100 Amazon gift card. What do you think? Did it trigger the $15 voucher?
That's a good intern. So I think it did, Robert.
The answer is in the Mileonomics Slack channel. So, yeah, get out and check that out. It runs through June 16th. All right, are you ready for the main topic?
All right.
So, I've been looking as a member of a Facebook group called the Travel Miles 101 group. So, this is a group that is associated with a free course that you can take on earning points and miles, you know, navigating this whole space that we talk about here so much. And questions come up there from people who are members of the group that are, I think, really interesting, right? Because they give us insight into people who are just starting out in the game, just really honest, you know, good questions about how to navigate this space. And I call them future listeners because I think they would be really, they do really well to be aware of our podcast and be able to answer these questions from, you know, guys who've been navigating the space for so many years. And I think in the spoken word form here, we can do a better job going deeper into the questions than a lot of times, you know, the kind of glib answers that you get on Facebook, you know, like do this, do that, yes, no, or they're snarky or something like that. So I'm going to give all these a thoughtful try. I've taken a few questions here and I want to kind of, I've rephrased them a tiny bit, but the spirit of the question is still there. But I want to hone in on one aspect of each of these questions that I think make for very interesting points of discussion here on our free show. So are you ready for question number one?
I'm ready, Robert. Let's do this. Yeah.
All right. Question number one. Okay. So my son, now 12, has been wanting to go on a cruise. I have never really felt a desire to go on one, nor has my husband, but he'll be grown soon, and we are willing to see what we're missing out on or not. We would prefer to use points, chase ultimate rewards, if possible, since travel hacking is my passion these days. What do you think? Are ultimate rewards a good way to pay for a cruise? So what I really want to hone in on here in terms of discussing this is it a good idea to pay for big ticket items that can't be paid for with, just like one or two credit card signups? Is it good to pay with bank points with, say, 1.5 cents a piece of uplift like you'd get through the Chase Sapphire Reserve? Is that a good way to use your bank points? Or you always hear people say you should be, redeeming those for premium cabin awards and things like that. So that's what I want to focus in on here. Whether a cruise is a good idea or not, that's kind of a polarizing topic, really. But is it good to pay for a big ticket item with bank points rather than using them for a theoretically better redemption if a cruise is really what you want to take? So I'm kind of setting it up a little bit there. But what do you think of the question and what I'm honing in on here, Sam?
Yeah. I guess, the technical side of it is, can you use ultimate rewards for a cruise? And the answer is yes, you can technically use them for a cruise. The broader question that you bring up about large purchases or a cruise for at least three people, you're looking at multiple thousands of dollars. So is that a good use of ultimate rewards? And really, at the end of the day, if you're not using ultimate rewards for that cruise, what are you going to use? You're going to pay cash, probably. So certainly the uplift side, which uplift is what we call here at Milenomics, that extra you get when you book travel with a point, like an ultimate reward point. Certainly that's important, because in this situation, let's say you're holding a Chase Sapphire Reserve, you could book at 1.5 cents per point. So is 1.5 cents per point towards cruises a good value? I think it's a fine value. It's better than cashing out at 1 cent and then paying for the cruise, as long as you can verify that the price of the cruise through Chase is the same as the price of the cruise through any other booking channel. Robert, what's your take on it?
I have used bank points to buy cruises before, and I think they're a fantastic redemption. A few things come to mind. Like you say, yeah, you can absolutely pay for a cruise through Chase. You call the number on the back of your card, and they have a specific department for cruises and tours. And in working with those people in the past, they are able to get you the best price on a cruise, as far as I've seen, and then you can pay for your points with uplift. I used City Thank You points, actually, right, to book a Disney vacation. And I was able to get the best price on that Disney vacation using public and private offer codes. And they were able to reduce the price as much as possible. And then they were able to pay for the balance of the cruise with bank points, getting a certain amount of uplift. In that case, it's 1.25 cents a piece of value on the Citi Premier card. But with Chase, things are a little bit different, although you go through the same channel. The one limitation with Chase is that you can't pay for Disney anything, and so you can't pay for Disney cruises. So provided, as long as you don't want to go on a Disney cruise, Chase could be a very good way to pay for them. I don't think you're leaving too much on the table in terms of discounting, because a lot of the cruises I've looked at are kind of a fixed set price from the cruise company. You can't go that much lower by going through a specific travel agent. So, do the math and make sure you're getting a good price. But I think it certainly is a good way. I mean, just the fundamental idea, anytime we use bank points, is that we want to make sure that we're getting the best price possible for that thing and then pay with bank points.
Yeah, exactly. What about the idea that a large purchase in general is a foolish use of points?
I think the exact opposite, actually, right? the transaction effort associated with booking this thing is going to be the same for booking a cruise as it is going to be for getting a ride to the airport on a bus. You can redeem ultimate rewards for either of those things, but you might take four ground transfers for one trip, whereas you're taking one big cruise that's one big redemption of points. So yeah, I think this is actually a fantastic scenario to use points. Like, I remember a question some time ago that we actually had a Brandon Asks about. Brandon Asks was a series we ran on the website that took a question that we saw answered in another blog, and maybe we didn't really like the way it was responded to. I think somebody asked the same question: how do I pay for a cruise with credit cards? And the response came back, oh, you should sign up for a Barclay Arrival Plus. And you'll just erase the purchase with the points that you have in the Barclay Arrival Plus. Well, if the cruise costs $3,000 and the credit card sign up is worth, what, $700 or something like that? How are you going to pay for a $3,000 cruise with a credit card? And but also, what credit card is out there that has a $3,000 sign up bonus? If you're aware of a card with such a bonus, let me know about it because I'd like to get it. So really, I think the key with bank points is that there is a system. You're looking for good systems, you know, ultimate rewards, membership rewards, city thank you points, whatever they might be. Or you can get sign-up bonuses from a bunch of different credit cards. And there are credit cards in that system that bonus spend in a lot of different categories. And they have upgrade offers, like we were talking about upstream. There's all these different ways to build up the balance of a currency in a singular program that you could do something like pay for a cruise with it. So I think Chase Ultimate Rewards are one of the best, and they'd be fantastic to pay for this vacation so long as it isn't a Disney cruise. So I think Chase Ultimate Rewards would be a great way to pay for this vacation. And don't let anybody tell you that's not a good idea, because he didn't ask about going on a premium cabin flight internationally. He asked about going on a cruise. So go forward and make that redemption. I think this is a great redemption. What do you think?
Well, the only last thing I want to add is that when you have a $3,000 cruise and you use, let's say, 200,000 points to book it, it is not a free cruise. Right? Let's just be sure that we are clear in that way. If you erase the purchase, it doesn't erase it and mean that it's totally free, because there's always a way to cash those points out. And so that's the situation. Are you cashing out 200,000 ultimate reward points, which you could cash out for $2,000 to buy a $3,000 cruise? That's actually very smart in my book, versus using $3,000 in cash and keeping those points forever.
Yeah, just in one review, the three different big bank point programs, Chase Ultimate Rewards, City Thank You Points, and Amex Membership Rewards, 1.5 cents a piece of uplift with the Sapphire Reserve, 1.25 with the Sapphire Preferred and other fee-based Ultimate Rewards cards. The City Thank You Premier gets 1.25 cents of uplift, and Amex Membership Rewards are actually terrible for a cruise. I think you get 0.7 cents of value for that, which is significantly worse than you would get in a cash out through the Schwab card, for example. So definitely look to Chase and to City Thank You Points or CNB if you want to look at booking a cruise. So, all right. I think that does it on question number one. Are you ready for question number two?
I'm ready, Robert. I like this. I'm getting into this. Hello, future listeners.
All right. We have our 20th anniversary coming up in Italy in April of 2020. I just booked a trip to Italy in April 2020. I'm interested in this response. I'm thinking of Rome for a couple of nights. I've been there. Hubby hasn't. And then head to the Amalfi Coast for 4 to 5 nights. Good choice. Any recommendations on where to go, how to get there, where to stay, and what to do or see on the coast? Our dates are flexible, but thinking April. So I want to discuss this in general because I'm interested in it. Like I said, I know you've been there. I've been through there briefly on a cruise. And I was wondering, you know, this destination is very iconic, a great popular spot for honeymoons and anniversaries. It's not a place where you think of using hotel points, though, right? So maybe Rome, you could do some things with hotel points. But when you get down to the Amalfi Coast, you know, there's not a lot of marquee Hyatts and Hiltons and Marriott properties, as far as I know. So what does that mean? We don't go anywhere where there's not points, or we look at approaching this differently? So what do you think in general? Do you think this is a good spot for an anniversary? And what do you do since you can't use traditional hotel points there so much?
Do I think it's great for an anniversary? Yeah, I think it's fantastic for an anniversary trip. I went with a young 8-month-old, 9-month-old, and had a great time. And it was part of a broader Italy trip. And, you know, the discussion of points and miles was there with the flights, but once we got to Italy, that all disappeared. It was, where do we really want to go? And that's the part of travel that I really want to get at here in answering this question, is what do you want to do and where do you want to go? Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's about seeing the world and the parts of the world that you want to see. It's not about having breakfast at as many hotels as you can have. At least in my book, that's not what it's about. That's not to say that, you know, here and there you can't find places that you can use some points at. You know, this person's obviously going to fly into Rome at some point. They're going to probably need a night in Rome or more to see the city of Rome. It's crazy to go to the Amalfi Coast for an anniversary and not spend at least a little time in Rome if you haven't been in a long time, because there's a lot there too, and it's a whole country. And you know, we talked about this on your European recap show. When you boil down a country to a single city or a single location, you really do the whole country a disservice. Can you use points in certain locations in Italy? Yes. Can you use points in the Amalfi Coast? I doubt it. Not actual. You're talking legitimate hotel program points, right, Robert? Not flexible bank points or anything.
That's what I think that people go to first, right? They think, you know, if I have Hyatt points, I'm going to stay at a Hyatt and any program similar to that. I was just in Rome, and there are some good options there for using traditional hotel points. But I really started first from where I wanted to stay. And I remember about 10 or 15 years ago, I stayed at a hotel that I absolutely loved. And it is just an independent boutique hotel. And what do you know? It's in the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal. So I just went there and I booked it there. I had got a great price on it. It was less than it was by booking direct with the hotel. I arrived and they gave us an upgrade, and we had just an absolutely fantastic time. They had free breakfast, they had free Wi-Fi. What more could you want? It sounds like they are a loyalty hotel, but I have top status at it, as far as I could tell. And I paid for it entirely with points, but I paid for them with bank points, not hotel points. So I would look to do the same exact thing down in the Amalfi Coast as well. There's tons of fantastic hotels that you can book through any of the bank point portals. So I would look to just using bank points instead of hotel points and stay where you want to stay, both location-wise and in the quality of the room. Sometimes, you know, these hotel loyalty chains, they need overhead in their pricing to support all of the free breakfast they're giving out, you know, for example. Yeah. So I think you see better value in boutique hotels. You can dial it in more in terms of location and end up staying where you really want to stay. So that would be my advice in terms of the lodging accommodations there. For a larger group, which I don't think this is, I would look more towards Airbnbs and things like that. That's what I'm going to do for a upcoming trip. But I think, you know, bank points over hotel points is the message here. And in terms of what to do in Rome, I've got a great tip for a pasta making class that I keep mentioning in all the shows here, but I thought that was fantastic. Again, something you can book through Airbnb experiences. I booked it through the Chase Rewards portal again. I mean, we keep coming back to that, but there is a lot of things that you can book in the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal. So definitely give that a look and get out of the mindset of just thinking of, you know, the points associated with airlines or hotels being the only thing that you can use. Bank points can be very valuable if you have some flexibility like you do here.
Absolutely great points, Robert. It reminds me of a post I wrote a long time ago about boutique hotels and family hotels in Europe and how I kind of isolate and find them. Hopefully we can link to that here. I think the larger issue is that some people maybe are a little nervous of venturing away from a hotel brand that they know of.
Good point.
You have to, though, at the Amalfi Coast. But then the other issue that I think is the brand itself really offers you very little guarantee of an experience from one hotel to another being identical. And I think it almost does you the opposite, or at least in my mindset it does, where you come in with an expectation based on some other hotel in the same brand holding a hotel in a totally different country with a whole different group of people working there to a standard that they can't match. Whereas when you come into these boutique hotels, you treat each one individual. I think that it ends up being a more enjoyable experience, at least for me, because of that.
That is really, really interesting. I haven't heard you say that before. We've been recording a lot of hours in the show here. And I think about that too. Like a lot of times if I'm being honest with myself, I'm being lazy. And I'm being lazy because I say, oh, yeah, I know what the Hyatt standard of service is. Or like, have you ever stayed at a Holiday Inn in Europe? They can be a lot nicer than a Holiday Inn in the United States, right?
Very nice, yes.
It's almost working in the opposite there. Like, you really don't know over there right. What the standard is for a given entity. So that's a terrific point. Thanks for adding that. I think that's definitely something to consider here. All right, are you ready to move on to the third question?
I'm ready. I like it. Let's go.
All right. Anyone have experience flying TAP using United or Ultimate Reward points? I'd like to fly from Boston to either Lisbon or Porto next spring. Also considering flying with American Miles or British Airways Miles from Bangor. Any tips?
Did you write this? Write this question, Robert?
I have an answer because I just did this.
I think you should go first on this because you literally did just do this.
Yeah. So I actually responded to the person there, and I actually responded on all of these, and maybe that makes me feel, we talked with one of the moderators over there about being able to answer these questions. And that moderator said, that's fine. So then she said, I responded that, yeah, TAP is a really good redemption because there's really good award availability for next spring. I saw personally, I was seeing up to 5 seats in business class per person from Lisbon to Boston per flight, ready to go. But I would say, you know, United is the first thing that you think about when booking TAP, because TAP and United are both Star Alliance partners, of course. But United wants 70,000 miles per person one way to get to Europe, whereas Aeroplan only wants 55,000 miles per person. Now, Aeroplan is a one-to-one transfer point, transfer partner of Amex membership rewards. And a nice feature of TAP, as well as Swiss to Europe, is that they don't charge fuel surcharges, which really makes Aeroplan, through membership rewards, a better way to book this than through United. You mentioned using United or Ultimate Reward Points. When you say Ultimate Reward Points, I think it's, yeah, again, coming back to the bank point we were talking about before, where you get 1.5 cents of uplift by booking with a Chase Sapphire Reserve. You can find really fair prices on TAP Portugal for paid fares. So always do the math and compare what the cash option is by booking through the Ultimate Rewards portal with that uplift versus, you know, paying with traditional airline miles, Aeroplan or United in this case. And another nice aspect of how they charge, they don't seem to charge a lot more for one-way flights. So you might fly over there, you know, in one direction on points in maybe business class on the way over because you want a lie-flat bed to sleep in for the nighttime flight, and maybe come back on a daytime flight, you know, premium cabin isn't as necessary. You can just book that in economy one way, and the price wouldn't be that bad. I saw fares for as low as $427 round trip from Boston to Lisbon. So wow. I think it's definitely one of those cases where you want to look at the cash price versus the airline mile price, and don't just blindly go with the airline mile price, even though I think 55,000 airplane miles per person is a really good deal. Anything to add on that one? Well, there's a follow-on question about using AA miles or British Airway miles. Do you see an angle on how to get there with those? Because they're notoriously tough for Europe.
The only thing that I would add is that tip that we talked about last week, book the first leg in Europe in economy to save on the fees coming back, the taxes and fees coming back, connect in Heathrow. But, you know, Bangor, Maine is going to be tough on British Airways. Something to consider, but it's important to remember that we don't all live in major hubs. And if you're in a smaller city that's serviced by American Airlines, the recent devaluation of British Airways partner awards really hurts you a lot more than someone like myself or Robert, because that flight from Bangor, Maine to Boston or to JFK is now 9,000 Avios. Was 6,500, and about a couple years ago it was 4,500. So that can really add up.
And a lot of award availability to contend with. I mean, you need to hit the jackpot three times. I mean, the Heathrow to Boston or JFK segment would probably be the easiest one of the bunch to deal with.
It actually would be the easiest. You're right, Robert. Yeah, those connectors are going to be tough. And then you end up with positioning flights and all of the protection that you need and building in extra nights. And it gets very difficult when you don't live in a major hub like we do. We're kind of spoiled in that way. So I would say look at any way you can get to a hub, even if it's, I don't know how far that drive would be, but you know, consider that drive as part of it.
Yeah.
I know that we got into award booking very heavy on the paid show last week and this week, and we even talked about it a little bit on last week's free show. So maybe this person, if they're a future listener, can go back and listen to those episodes and get some tips for Europe travel in premium cabins from there.
Great, great tips. All right, one last question to round out this segment. And this one is kind of a caricature of a bunch of questions that I see. The preamble of the question always seems to start off with, I booked a trip to, you know, XYZ using points, so it was free. Any tips on how to save on meals and activities? So I get lost on the second part about saving money on meals and activities because I take issue with the first part about the trip being free because you're paying with points and miles. I think we irrationally think of the miles and points that we spend as free because we didn't lay out cash to earn them, but we probably made a lot of sacrifices to earn those points and miles, whether it's in terms of effort or prioritizing sign-up bonuses or the opportunity cost of going for a different credit card or not cashing out those points or miles for, you know, cash in a lot of cases. So what do you think? Does it make you cringe a little bit when you say someone got a trip for free?
Absolutely makes me cringe, yeah, because I think what other irrational financial decisions are they making, or what other you know, blinders do they have on to what they're actually spending here? And then I think that it ends up you are maybe going to end up overspending in other areas. You know, if you say, well, I only want to spend $3,000 on this trip, and the flights were totally free, so I can spend $3,000 on all the hotels and all the food and everything else. Let's say you booked a premium cabin there. You may have already spent $3,000 on the flights and not even know it. So it's tough for me to get behind the idea that the flights are free or you erase the cost of park tickets to Disneyland, because you don't. You don't erase anything. what do they say? Matter is neither created nor destroyed, and neither is money. It's always in the equation here, especially at Milenomics. So my personal belief is to convert everything back to cash, however you can, however you value those points, convert them back to cash and be okay with the amount of that cash you're spending. Because ultimately, it's your valuation. You know, what I value an ultimate reward point at 1 cent.
Everything that you said there is absolutely spot on. And it starts to play into people's personal finance realm. And that's a tricky area to wade into. And hey, we don't want to be killjoys here. We want everyone to enjoy the best vacations possible. But I the notion that travel is free when you're paying with points or miles, it bothers me because you can start to make irrational decisions. Like, say, for example, you could go to New York City and you can stay at one of two hotels. One is a Hilton that you can stay at with 90,000 Hilton points, or one is like a really nice boutique hotel that totally meets the situation for $200. Like, you're gonna go stay at the Hilton because it's free, and there's this aversion towards laying out cash in that situation. But you know, if that Hilton costs, you know, like $150 and it was really inflated with the points, it really wasn't a good redemption of Hilton points in the first place. But we're so drawn to it, right? Because we have all these Hilton points and we can stay there for free, but we didn't choose the option that was really a better fit for us. So it starts to mess with our minds. And if, like you said, you back things out into how much the cash equivalent is to them, I think it makes it just a lot more effective as travelers, as people who are using points and miles as part of the equation in terms of funding the best travel for us. But we need to be honest to ourselves and say, you know, we use cash and points and miles as fungible assets that go towards achieving the goals that we want to take.
Absolutely. Well, we could do a whole show on that one question, I bet, Robert. Maybe we should in the future.
Maybe we should. I think that's good for now. What do you think? Did you enjoy taking some listener questions, future listener questions?
I did, you know, and if you're an actual listener and you have a question, go ahead and leave it in the comments below. If you're a future listener, hello from the past.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/milenomics. There, you'll get a special link to listen to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
And as always, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Milenomics and Robert is at Robert Dwyer. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, we'll see you on the site.